Hey, how are you? Happy Tuesday to you here on Lunch with Klabes and Joe here on Klabes Online. We are powered by Ameren, Illinois, driven by Munganast St. Louis Acura, and sponsored by the HomeLoanExpert.com. I'm Joe Roderick, joined alongside by Mike Claiborne down in Atlanta. Klabes, I would imagine you and most of the Cardinals are a bit lacking of sleep these past 48 hours or so.
Yeah, that would be a good way to put it. You know, obviously, the getting in here like 2:30 Sunday morning, Monday morning, and then playing until I think we finished up the game a little after 1 Eastern time. We didn't get back to the hotel until almost 2. So, yeah, it's been a long time. I don't think there are many guys on the first bus to the ballpark. and probably there's going to be a late report anyway. Yeah. So. I get it. I mean, it can be taxing. I know if it's taxing for us, I know the players have to feel a little drag as well. So, you know what, though? It comes with the business. Ricky Horton and I talked about this last night. See, I remember when they would fly commercial. You know, you'd have to be first flight out the next day. So things have changed. It's a little bit more comfortable. Unfortunately, we stay in good hotels, and there's multiple buses to take. So you can kind of get there on your own. And, you know, players get there so early now that they can get a nap in and do whatever they want to do at the ballpark. I mean, there's plenty of space now, except Wrigley Field.
Yeah, and that, you know, it happens. It seems to happen to every team at least once a year where mm-hmm. this happens. And at some point, you're going to see, you know, the Cardinals have been competitive the last 2 days. They were, you know, they weren't hitting the ball Sunday night, but it was still a somewhat close game. Last night, they had the 2 home runs late. They had the bases loaded with Arenado up. So they had a chance to win it. But with these kind of back-to-back and these piling up, you know at some point they're going to wear one where it's going to be a blowout where you're going to see Pujols on the mound, something like that. It's going to be one of those games to kind of catch up and kind of hit that reset button because this team has no days off coming up.
No, you're just trying to get to the All-Star break. And, you know, this team's got some issues that they've got to address. We're 82 games into the season, so now we can talk about Flag Day, the official day now, July 4th this year. This team has some needs, and I don't know how to fix them. They need a legitimate starting pitcher. I'm not talking about a fourth or fifth guy. I'm talking about a guy who can go out and get the ball and give you 7 or 8 innings every day, every fifth day. You also need catching. Catching is at a premium right now, and you don't have any. And I think, thirdly, you need a better bench. You need some punch off the bench. I mean, Nootbaar didn't get it done. Sosa's not getting it done. Connor Capel has just come on the scene. He's had a couple of good games here recently, but too small of a sample size to let you know whether he's actually going to be able to make a real contribution down the stretch. So you have all those issues, and I'll throw one more in. You need one more legitimate guy who understands how to close in the bullpen. You know, a lot of teams are going by committee as far as closers are concerned, because they're getting used every day. But the Cardinals don't have that yet. I mean, you know, Gio, yeah, he can do it. I mean, he's done it, but not always what you would hope for. Helsley's trying to figure it out. It takes him 2 days to recover. So there are a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of work to be done between now and certainly the trade deadline.
It, with Sosa, as I go back to the point you were making with the bench, I've liked what I've seen out of Sosa here lately. You've seen a few sparks of what made him that starter for you last year and took the job from Paul DeJong. And you don't need him there every day like you did last year. I mean, last year you relied on him to help with that 17-game winning streak. You don't need that out of him right now. But I think the bench gets stronger as the team gets healthier. Is Tyler O'Neill expected back before this weekend? Or
probably this weekend. No, he's in Memphis. He's playing in Memphis now. So the book on him was he'd play today and Wednesday, see how he feels on Thursday, maybe rejoin us on Friday in St. Louis.
So you get him back. Bader, is there any update with his foot?
I haven't heard anything on that.
And that's not really one that you're going to need a rehab. Maybe they send him down just to get a few swings against.
No, he's going to need a rehab. No, he's going to need a rehab. It's plantar fasciitis. He's got to be able to learn how to deal with that because it just doesn't go away. You can just, you know, cool it down a little bit. So he's going to need some time to get himself squared away just to get his bat right.
and those two coming back, that's going to improve the bench, right? That's going to help out with getting you, because they move into the starting spot. You get to move Donovan around a bit more. You get to give a few guys a day off here and there. Yepes probably goes back to a DH bench role more often than not. And I think it does deepen you. The catching is just the biggest concern. Right. See,
I'm going to back you up on that for a second. These guys have been successful, Donovan, Yepes, because they've been getting four at bats a night. When you relegate those guys to being bench guys where they don't get those at bats with regularity, I don't know how sharp they can stay. Now, you do have the advantage of the DH where you can move some people around, but I'm just not sure if that's going to be the answer that you're looking for. I mean, I hope, because I think you're right, they're going to have to probably do it. But I just think I'd like to have a little bit more experience. Mm. This is where Corey Dickerson was supposed to come into play. This is where Albert was supposed to come into play. Neither one of them have done very much. So, you know, now you're relegated to some rookies who, again, were very effective when they were getting four at bat tonight. I just don't know if that's going to, you know, move over and be the same when you come off the bench.
And I wonder, too, if it is, you know, I'm talking about these guys coming back. I wonder if it is Bader that ends up in a bench role. Because
no,
Yepes has been hot as of late. Donovan in the running for rookie of the year, you'd have to think.
Bader's defense is too good to put him on the bench. Remember, you don't put Gold Glovers on the bench, yeah. Legitimate ones. So I think he comes back and he plays. But they'll have to find some playing time for those guys. I don't disagree with you on that. And maybe they rotate all three of those guys. Carlson's in that mix as well. You know, you got two center fielders in Carlson and Bader. You know, you got corner guys in Yepes and Donovan and O'Neal. So there are some opportunities. I just think you have to be creative. You probably have to look at the matchups even closer on who can do what against who. I think those things are going to come into play. And this is where the manager's just going to have more information than you, me, or anybody else with regard to what the best matchup looks like.
So when you look at the catching position, we know that they just signed Austin Romero yesterday. They brought him
Romine,
and they have they sent Herrera back down to AAA. At some point, you need to get any kind. I mean, right now it's like having a pitcher batting ninth for you with the production you're getting out of that ninth spot. I don't know what names are out there.
There
right
are
now, none. And that's you've already tapped out everything in your minor league system too. There's nothing else there to go to. What are the options there right now? You can't trade for. I mean, can you trade for a guy knowing that when Yadi's healthy and comes back? I mean, is Yadi
we don't even know if Yadi's going to be healthy or. And you know, I don't really care what he thinks at this point. You know, listen. Had he come to camp in better shape, we might not be in this situation. You know, this is his final year. You want to be a good, positive one. But at this point, you can't worry about somebody's feelings because you have to be able to play today and beyond. And we don't know when or if he's coming back. You know, I don't know if anybody who's from the Cardinals that have gone down to see him in Puerto Rico to see how his rehab is coming. You know, all we knew is he had a barking knee. We don't know the extent of it. Was it something torn? Was it a meniscus? Was it cartilage? We don't know. So all those things are in the dark. So we have to be able to be in a position to say, all right, we love to have you, but in the meantime, we got to find somebody to play. Mm-hmm. And they did this a couple of years ago when they had they brought in A.J. Pierzynski, and he did a really nice job. The unfortunate thing is there isn't a Pierzynski out there that can swing the bat a little bit and also catch. I was even looking at Kurt Suzuki.
Kurt Suzuki is a name that I've liked.
16 years and he's hitting 200.
Yeah, that's and it's a guy that is also 16 years as a catcher. We know how that goes. That's the end of the road there. You know Matt Wieters a few years ago came in and you know what when he was needed he hit the ball well.
Something. Yeah. And he was a good receiver.
Yeah, you just that's not out there right now.
No,
you need to look at teams that have catchers coming up in the system that are ready to bring those catchers up from AAA where they're going to have to drop a guy off. Those are the kind of teams you need to start looking at.
You know, I'll tell you a guy I'd probably take a flyer on. He's kind of middle of the pack, Yan Gomes. I take a flyer on him.
Is he? Did the Cubs release him, or is he still?
No, he's still there. But I mean,
and that's the thing: the Cubs aren't going to trade you Yan Gomes, are they?
Well, you never know. You never know. I guess they keep him around only because they're going to move Contreras.
Yeah,
the PJ Higgins is a guy that they like, but I don't know if he's the answer. But neither is Gomes. They're trying to get through a season, I guess.
And then with all this, you're talking about trade chips that you have that could be used on pitching that now at the beginning of the year, you didn't expect that you would have to use a trade chip, or you didn't expect to have to use an extra roster spot on a catcher. And now you're having to look at that. And that's just kind of, you know, added headache, I guess.
Yeah, you're right. You know, we were talking about this yesterday. The season was supposed to be Flaherty, Michaelis, Hudson, Hicks and Reyes and Waino. That was going to be your rotation. Let's see who's still here: Hudson, Waino, and Michaelis, and Mats. Mats was going to be in a rotation, so that's no longer in play. You bring in Albert, thinking maybe there was still lightning in the bottle. There isn't. You think Yadi's going to be ready to go? He's not. You thought DeJong was going to be better. He isn't. Now, the best thing about that is, you know, you find, you know, Gorman is closer to being ready than we thought. He still has his issues. Yepes and Donovan were two guys that didn't make the roster coming out of spring training. Now, although I told you at the beginning, I thought Donovan was better than Nukar. Yeah. And, you know, your outfield, you thought you were going to have a bench with Corey Dickerson. We now have a left-handed bat that can help us coming off the bench and play a little outfield. Well, that didn't work out. So a lot of the things that they threw on the wall in spring training and in the offseason just haven't worked. And I don't know where they'd be without, for most recently, James Nail. I don't know where they would be without some other guys who've come in. Packy Naughton has plugged a gap from time to time.
Oviedo, Fernandez.
Junior Fernandez is the most improved guy I've seen. On the Memphis shuttle. I mean, I was talking to a couple of Miami Marlin players, say he had best power sinker they've seen all year. You know, and you think about the division they're in, they see some pretty good pitching. Mm-hmm. So he's made some real strides. Now you get Hicks back. You know, now you got that 1-2 punch with Gallegos and Helsley. Cabrera's throwing a bullpen today. So you have him. Zach Thompson has made a name for himself. So your bullpen's starting to shape up. The question is, when are you going to get a pitcher beyond Miles Michaelis so he can go 7 innings? Because you need that. We're out of excuses, Joe, about stretching them out, okay? We played 82 games, and there's no excuse for anybody not being ready to go. Maybe if you come off of an injury or something along that line. But at last check, Hudson and Waino have not been hurt. And they can barely get to the 5th inning these days against good teams. And you think about the record. Our record is not very good against teams over 500 records.
No, you've beaten up on the Reds, the Pirates this year. That's what they've done. And
you can only beat the teams in your division. Think about it. They couldn't beat Baltimore.
I was just going to say that you haven't beaten some of the other teams. Baltimore came and got you. The Cubs.
You couldn't beat Arizona.
Yeah. Who was it? So, yeah, the Phillies are hurting right now. They just took 2 out of 3 from you.
Yeah.
After you put out, and that was going to be my point too, that you're mentioning all this that they're missing out on right now. We like to sit and pick on the Angels for what they are doing, just kind of pissing away years of Shohei and Mike Trout being on the team. Right now, you have Paul Goldschmidt, who's running away with the NL MVP, and you have Nolan Arenado, who was the best player in baseball in April, who had a very good June, and right now in the first 5 days of July has had the best 5 days of July so far. His only down month was May. You have two of the best hitters right now in the National League hitting .340 in your lineup, and you're hovering 5 games or so over .500. You are wasting a once in a generation third baseman and one of the best hitters in baseball right now.
And that's because you don't pitch.
Right.
I mean, so, you know, there's a lot of issues, but you're going to have to get really creative here. And you got to move a player maybe you didn't want to move. I think the Untouchables are Wynn and Jordan Walker in the minors.
Just in the minors? Okay.
Yeah. I think on this ball club, the only untouchables are Edmund. I think your infield is untouchable. I think the outfield's in play. I think I'd like to hold on to Carlson a little bit longer. But, you know, Bader and O'Neill are getting close to – well, they're in arbitration. They'll be free agents somewhere down the road. And you have to ask yourself the question, do you want to make that sort of money investment in those two guys? You know, both of them have shown flashes, but none of them have shown consistency.
At some point, because we've seen this musical chairs of the outfield before. Remember, it used to be Piscotty out there. It was Grichik that was out there. We've seen these guys coming through over and over again. You know, they let Ozuna go, and for I think more reasons.
For good reasons.
Play, I was going to say for more reasons than just on the field, but they traded for Ozuna and they let him go after 2 years. We've seen this rotating. You know, I remember growing up, it seemed like that was the second base position for the Cardinals. That would always just be year after year. They'd find somebody new to play second base and kind of plug and play. And now for the last decade, it seems to be the outfield. At some point, do you need to have a guy sticking around more than 3 years? I mean, when you're talking about all three outfield positions.
Well, you know what? They've drafted well in
they
that
have.
Position. And I think that's the reason why you see the turnover more than anything else. But, you know, all those guys are expendable. I mean, you mentioned once in a generation with Arenado and Goldschmidt, and I agree. I think Tommy Edman is really the prototype of what you look for in the future of baseball being a multi-position player. Nolan Gorman, I think his swing just makes you say, we need to keep him around. And then everybody else is in play. Pitchers, too. Mm-hmm. You know, that was a time when you thought, oh, we couldn't move Liberatore. Well, you know, I know he's still trying to figure it out, but aren't we at a point in the season where he should be able to figure it out? So I'm not trying to advocate trading any of these guys, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you that they're untouchables.
And he's pitched against really bad teams, too, and hasn't had great outings against those bad teams.
Well, the other day, Philadelphia was a good example. You can't get out of the third inning and you got a 5-0 lead. Yeah, that just can't happen. They didn't have Harper in the lineup. I mean, it wasn't even their best lineup, and you couldn't get out of it.
And you got better lineups coming ahead, too. You got Philadelphia again, and then the Dodgers coming up. So it's, you know, it's not going to get any easier for his next two starts if he stays up here on the big league club. So we'll tonight we'll see. They'll do it again. They have number 2 of 4. Down in Atlanta for the series there before they come back and face the Phillies again coming up this weekend. Hey, this is Lunch with Klabes and Joe. We're powered by Ameren, Illinois, driven by Munganass St. Louis Acura, and also sponsored by the Home Loan Expert. Find them online at thehomeloanexpert.com. We still have a lot to get to. Big doings in the world of college sports, and we will get to all of that here in just a bit. Stick around. Back after this.
And Bader hits it out to deep left center. It's at the wall, and it's off the wall. It scoots away. Bader racing to third. He's going to score. Inside the park home run. Sliding in head first.
Join us on Saturday, July 9th, when the Cardinals take on the Philadelphia Phillies. That day, take home a short-sleeved hooded pullover. For tickets and more information, go to cardinals.com/promotions.
Hi, I'm Mike Claiborne, and I'm with the Gillespies, and I have to ask you a question. Is it true that you need a big down payment to buy a house these days?
No, Mike, that is not true. I've closed several clients with zero money down.
Seriously, $0 down. And as a bonus, we'll give you a $500 gift card when you mention Mike Claiborne. Only at jnjloans.com.
Hey, back here, Lunch with Klabes and Joe here on KlabesOnline.com, driven by Munganass St. Louis Acura, powered by Ameren, Illinois, and also sponsored by the Gillespies at the Home Loan Expert.com. Clabes.com. Clabes, it was last week, right after, by the way, we recorded another episode of 5460, the Joe West podcast. We have some really good ones in the can coming up this week. It's a Friends of Joe, a 4th of July episode. Larry Gatlin of the Gatlin Brothers and Dave Casper, the Pro Football Hall of Famer. Both of them, two separate interviews that you have on the episode. But Clabes, here are the next few weeks of the episodes to kind of give you a taste of what's to come. We will have Hawk Harrelson, a guy that was very critical of Joe during his career, but now they couldn't be closer friends as they've both retired. We'll have a special All-Star Game Memory Edition first half kind of recap of the baseball season coming up after that. And then Clabes, this past week, we had a chance to talk with Sir Charles Barkley. And I feel like that episode could have gone 3 hours if we had the time.
You know, I talked to him the next day, and as you know, he and I have some mutual friends, and he said, man, if I'd have known that, we could have kept going. I thought you guys were running out of time. I said, no, we didn't want to take your time. He said, we'll do it again. So I'm looking forward to us doing something. Maybe what I'm thinking is doing a podcast with him and Roy Green, the great Roy Green, and maybe those three get to talking, you know, and having a good time. So we got some things planned. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to everybody having a chance to check us out when we visited with Charles last week.
I know in the future too, we just got to set up the time now. Jason Wirth is going to be on with us, the former Philly, the former National, the Chatham, Illinois product, as I've been trying to get him to join us, but he's been too busy on the golf course practicing for whatever.
Us this weekend.
He and Barkley and all those. Yeah, the Tahoe. So now that he's retired, he's a golfer and he's a horse guy, Jason Wirth.
Well, you know what? As Charles said, when he retires, all you can do for him is let him fish and play golf. I think I'm going to have one other thing I'm going to do when I get to that level. But, you know, those guys have put in so much work in their careers, and for them to actually have this time off, and you hear that's all they want to do. Well, you know what? They never were able to do it when they were playing. So good for them. And we're looking forward to visiting with Jason. He was a really good player, had a lot of good stories for sure. So we got quite a few people coming up that I think people will get a kick out of.
Yeah. So right after we recorded that last week, the news broke out of the Big Ten of them adding two more teams. And I think it's going to be a huge domino effect that we're going to see throughout college sports over the next maybe months, definitely over the next few years. But I think it's going to be sooner rather than later, as a story just came out recently about more moves. But USC and UCLA joining the Big Ten. So now the Big Ten stretches all the way from Rutgers and Maryland all the way to the West Coast out to USC and UCLA. This is more than just these are separate leagues now that are within these conferences. Yeah. These are no longer territorial like your dad's college football conferences.
No, you're right. And tip of the cap to Kevin Warren, the Big Ten commissioner. You remember he got a lot of heat during the pandemic where, you know, they had a shortened schedule because of the pandemic and everybody wasn't sure on what to do. He decided to err on the side of caution. But for him to pull this out of his hat says a lot about his vision. But, you know, you're right. It's now a national conference. And I've said this to you before countless times. I'm saying by the end of the 24th season, the NCAA, as we know, will no longer exist. I think these conferences are going to take their ball and move down the street. They can go convince the networks that they're in every major market. They're going to have the best games from the best teams in the country. And they're going to set up their own rules about recruiting and name and likeness and all those other things. And the NCAA, as we know it now, will still be in charge of conferences that aren't part of, or teams that aren't part of these new super conferences. And they still is a place for them. But now with new leadership on the way in the NCAA, this is a time for them to revamp themselves. Or do they do enough of work to convince the conferences that they can still do this properly? A lot of things going to happen in the next 2 years. But I'm going to tell you this, come the start of the 24-25 season, the NCAA or college football or college sports will have a completely different look.
Have they announced who the who's replacing Mark Emmert yet?
No.
Is that no. When has there been any? Do we know who's in the running for that?
There were some people internally that I know were talked about, but I think that if they're smart, they need to go away and start over again. Now I'll tell you a guy who I think, from a sentimental standpoint, I think Jay Billis would be an interesting guy because he understands that side of it. He's a lawyer. He understands the inner workings. He's dealt with big time schools before. He might be an interesting guy, if nothing else, to be part of a committee or a search committee. I think they need to have some of the, quote, student athletes, unquote, be involved in the search process. And I think it really should be made up of about four or five different people. I think former athletes should be involved. I think there should be a coach's representative. I think there should be a marketing representative. And I think there should be an academic representative, as well as a president of universities to be. I think it should probably be an 8 to 12, maybe 14 person committee to make the next election. And also you have to have a TV person in the mix.
And when you talk about TV, we were talking about the markets. So Rutgers kind of takes over that New York market. You have all those teams in the Midwest that give you all the major cities there. You've now gone out west to the LA area, and you kind of look at what other markets are out there. And you and I talked about this before, and we talked about it before we went on the air too, that the SEC has done a very good job of getting that entire Southeast, and now they've moved on into Texas and gotten there. There's really one major market, I think, in the state of Texas that is not part of any of those major conferences right now. That'd be Houston. And that you could maybe, but I think then you look at a Colorado to get that Denver market, maybe a Nevada or UNLV to get that Vegas market as you're moving around. But as you pointed out, those teams need to be better at sports if you want to get the eyes on them, if you want to be able to convince TV markets or the TV networks that these are markets worth going after.
Here's one common thing here. You know, we talk about the programs and their ability to compete. Look at all those schools. They all have facilities. All right. And the ones who don't are on the bottom end. But, you know, if you want to be in the SEC, you got to keep up. You want to be in the Big Ten, you got to keep up. There were some schools in the Pac-12 that just weren't able to keep up, hence the reason they weren't invited. So you have to make sure your facilities are online, and that will give you a better way to attract other players to come play at your university. So they need to look internally. They need to look at their infrastructure before they decide to feel like they can actually compete at this level. It's just like when you see schools that want to move into Division One and they were Division Two. Well, man, you better look at your gym. You better look at your fitness center. You better look at your dormitory status. You better look at your weight room. All those things go into it. And if you don't have it, and if you're not competitive with the other conferences or the other schools in the conference, then you're not going to survive.
Yeah, the latest story that came out, CBS Sports' Dennis Dodd, about a half an hour ago, just posted a story about the idea right now of the Big 12 and the Pac-12 possibly merging, with quotes from each conference out there talking about how it says in here, the Big 12 is targeting Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, Utah, and then also talking about adding Oregon and Washington. And the Big 12 isn't adding those schools. Those are two conferences merging. That's all that's left.
Yeah. And you know what?
Those conferences.
I think they need to get in the room and say, hey, fellas, let's quit banging our heads against the wall, competing against each other. Let's figure out how we come together as one. And then the problem is, well, who's going to run it? Because there's going to be one commissioner that won't have a job. Okay.
Well, who just left? Who just stepped down?
Was it
Bob Bowlesby? Was it Bowlesby? Because I thought the Pac-12 just had a change too.
Well, I mean, maybe if you're looking at something,
yeah. But if you're looking at both those conferences making changes like that, then I mean, you're talking about, okay, that sounds pretty simple then to make it. The Pac-12 just had George Kliakoff, July 1st, 2021, was named their commissioner. Well, Bowlesby's been the commissioner of the Pac-12 since 2012. And he's 70 years old. So
remind me to tell you the story about him. And he's a Pac-12 guy, right? I mean, the Big 12.
Who is?
Big 12.
Bowlesby is Big 12. He's 70 years old. So, I mean, that seems like it's pretty easy. If the guy is 70, probably looking at retirement at some point.
I agree. So there you go.
Yeah, it seems, hey, you know what? You retire this guy that's been running the Pac-12 for a year. We'll give him the reins to everything.
Yeah, remind me to tell you a story about Bob Bowlesby and an elected official having a moment one day.
All right.
Yeah, you'll love this story.
So I,
well, no, you know what? I could tell the story. Hell,
I was going to say, it seemed like you were wanting to make it off air. I wasn't going to
push.
So
here's the deal. So this is when Missouri was being courted by the Big Ten. All right. And Bowlesby, I guess it was at the Big 12 conference championship. And Bowlesby, who was a commissioner, approached Jay Nixon, the then governor of the state of Missouri, and kind of got in his face about how could you allow this to happen in your state, the whole 9 yards. Kind of was trying to browbeat Jay. Well, if anybody knows Jay Nixon, that's the one thing you can't do to him. And as story has it, Jay just started poking him in the chest and saying, I have a commitment to 8 million Missourians, and that's why I'm doing what we're going to do. And he used some other choice words along the way, but there were people, and, you know, Jay's a big guy. You know, and he's poking this guy in the chest like, hey, so-and-so, you know, you better stand down if you want to end up seeing the rest of this game you're here at. But it was classic. It was classic Jay Nixon. You know, he was stepping up for his state and not the conference. And I applaud him for it. And I think he's one of the other reasons why Missouri is in the in the SEC.
Yeah.
He had a kid that was going to Wisconsin. So, you know, that was a tough call.
So when do you think we see more teams jump? Do you think it's going to happen before we get to the college football season? I know none of it's going to take place yet, but do you think more announcements will come?
I think you will, because they want to put themselves in a position to be one step closer. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of things that come with that. You know, with conferences come officiating and the logistics of everything and scheduling. So I think you'll see more sooner than later. And I'll tell you one thing. I think when the seasons are over, you're going to really see that one last thump, because I think they want to have everything lined up by the end of 24.
Yeah, that'll be it's going to be fun to see Texas and Oklahoma in the SEC playing that SEC schedule here in the next year.
But here's the other thing that comes with that. Now that we have more teams, can we add another conference game to the schedule? I mean, let's face it. And I've gone over this countless times. If you have 3 non-conference games, you should play one from a comparable conference. The other one should be a regional, you know, like Missouri should be playing Iowa or Kansas. And then if you want to put a blood donor on there, so be it. Or do you put a conference game on there and weight it in some way, shape, or form? Maybe it's new members playing each other.
You should have that blood donor should be either the first game of the season or it should be the last game before a conference championship. Like when Alabama plays those blood donors, it's always at a, you know, it's always right before like Auburn or a few, you know, with week 8 or something like that. And it always is so weird that it's just middle of the season. That should be your warm up for the year. That should be, and for those blood donors, that should be, hey, you know what? This is your game for fun. You're going to get to go see a real nice facility at an SEC.
We're going to get a paycheck.
You're going to get a paycheck. And then, hey, every game after this is going to be against teams a lot worse.
Yeah.
That's how you have to look at those two.
And the other thing is this, the way you put it, and I agree with you, you also have to put the emphasis on losing early does not hurt you. You know, I mean, because they put these games on the schedule. Well, the reason why we don't play tougher teams, our league is tough. Mm-hmm. Okay, we know that. So we take that into account when it comes to the rankings. You know, you're playing a team within your conference compared to some schmo that nobody's ever heard of. Or if you're going to play outside the conference, as I mentioned, if the SEC is going to step out. So if Alabama and Ohio State play each other early in the season, that's not one that's going to count against you, because we all know you played a very good team. But if Alabama is playing Ohio Wesleyan, then, you know, that's a no-brainer. You don't get credit for that. So you want to reward teams for playing other good teams. Now, that may mean you may not see many teams run the table, because I think you see more teams going to the playoffs with a loss, but it also opens up the playoff format as well. Instead of going to four, you go to eight because everybody's all in the same swimming pool now.
Basketball does a good job, and I know basketball is more games and losses don't mean as much in basketball, but basketball does a good job of having those conference versus conference weeks. Mm-hmm. You know, like and it'd be fun to see football do that. It would be fun to see the SEC versus the Big Ten and have a whole weekend where it's just games of those two conferences going up against each other and setting it up either based on last season's rankings or because the preseason rankings come out far ahead. I mean, you can set those up the year before and have those.
Here's what you do. I got an idea. Now, we're solving the problems of the world. Mm-hmm. So for all those bowl games that we used to see that have kind of gone by the wayside, why don't you put those teams in those games early in the year and then save your other legitimate bowl, orange, sugar, cotton, whatever you want to call it, if you got the four bowls. They still have their impact when it comes to the tournament late in the year. But, you know, what you look at those cities, like the Motor City Bowl, why not put Michigan and Arkansas in that game? Or somewhere where it's a bowl game that's got the bowl format and the understanding of how to run an event, give them a chance to have a chance to make money compared to the bowl game that they normally have that nobody goes to.
I think the bowl games need to go away. That's going to be the next step in all of this. Is there's going to be, with all of these mergers and everything, you need to get to a 16 team postseason.
See, I don't think there are enough teams. I don't think there's 16 teams that are good enough.
And those first eight seeds, you give them that one seed, Alabama. They'll say they're the one seed.
So how many games are you planning on playing now? How many games are you talking about playing? You're talking about playing more games than the NFL does.
Nah, if you're playing a 10, I mean, so what? You go 12 and you give the first four a bye?
I don't know, man. I think there's a lot of things that come with that. First of all, I don't know if there are that many good teams. Second of all, I don't know if there are that many good players for each team. And thirdly, you know, at some point it'd be a good idea for guys to go to class. Now, if you want to take that time frame from when school is out in the winter, and take it through the end of January when classes might resume, I get that. But everybody's got to be on the same page with regard to scheduling. There's a lot of things that go into this. All right. I think we scratched the surface of it. But I think we both agree that it's not going to look the same here in the very near future.
No, absolutely not. Hey, we need to take another break here on Lunch with Klaibs and Joe here on KlaibsOnline.com. Powered by Ameren, Illinois, driven by Munganast St. Louis Acura, and also sponsored by the Gillespies at thehomeloanexpert.com. We will be back in just a bit.
St. Louis Acura has almost 200 pre-owned vehicles in stock with inventory arriving daily and can offer the best trade-in value. While others raise their prices and fees, we choose to earn your repeat and referral business by not taking advantage of the current market situation. We invest in our team, becoming one of St. Louis's top places to work and fastest growing companies. St. Louis Acura remains committed to becoming better than ever for you. Located at Manchester and Mason Roads.
Klaibs, one of the sponsors here of Lunch with Klaibs and Joe, is Pawfect K9, and I know you love the work that they do with your dogs over there, talking about just how great they are and how much of a difference you see just after one session.
Well, I got to tell you, I took my dog over there about a week ago. There was some behavioral issues that were kind of getting out, and that was more me being away. And in just the one session, I learned so much, as did my dog. And they train dogs, all breeds. They even train security dogs, and they have different sessions for that. But I will tell you, what they're able to do with any pet, no matter how big or how small, is amazing. And as a matter of fact, I've got an appointment when I come off this road trip. We're going to work on a couple of other things. But what I would suggest, go online and check them out. When you talk to them, tell them you talk to me, and I speak volumes about what they've been able to do for my dog, and I know they can do the same for you. No matter, again, the breeds doesn't make a difference, the size doesn't make a difference. if there are certain things you're concerned about with your pet, whether it's a new pet, and yes, they can teach an old dog new tricks, or just if you want to have a family pet for your kids, these are the guys that have come in, and they will come to you. You can come to them, but they can come to you and walk you through whatever you need to have done with your dog to make sure not only the dog knows what needs to take place, but you will too. So check them out. Go online, check them out. Show that logo again, Joe. And you'll understand how important they can be for you and your well-being and your family and your friends and your dog for sure.
That is Pawfect K9, PawfectK9.com. Pawfect K9, another sponsor here of Lunch with Klaibs and Joe.
Hi, I'm Mike Claiborne. I'm with the Gillespie team. And as you know by now, things like food, groceries, and gas are all becoming more expensive by the day. This is a way for you to find some new cash in your home, and these guys are going to help you out.
You know what, Mike? Your home has never been more valuable than it is now. So take advantage of the equity with a cash out refinance.
You can even use that money to pay off credit cards, do some home renovations, or even put that money in the bank for those crazy high gas prices.
Our average client receives about $54,000. How much can you get?
Find out now at jnjloans.com.
Back with more Lunch with Klaibs and Joe. Hey, we're driven by Munganess St. Louis Acura, sponsored by the Gillespies at thehomeloanexpert.com, and also sponsored by Ameren Illinois, powered by Ameren Illinois. And Klaibs, as you know, I'm over here on the Illinois side of the river. I actually had a question about my most recent bill at Ameren. You know what I did? I went on the website. I logged right in. Had a support team member, answered all of my questions in about 5 minutes earlier this morning. Could not have been easier to get that done over at the Ameren Illinois website at ameren.com.
They are so customer service driven.
Yeah, it was great. I had a simple question. They answered it. They explained it all to me. Done. Over. And it really took about 5-10 minutes in front of the computer this morning. Could not have been easier. So a big thank you to the folks out at Ameren Illinois. Klaibs, I feel like we push this topic off to next week with the NBA, because I know how worked up you were last week about the possibility of Kyrie Irving going to the Lakers. And now it seems like even more of a case. So I want that to actually happen before we bring it up to you again. Because I just want to see how heated you get off of that. But, and then maybe too, by next week, Kevin Durant gets traded to a new team too, and we just see that entire Brooklyn Nets dynasty that was made 2 years ago. We see how quickly it gets broken up and torn apart. So we save that to next week. But Jokic, the highest paid NBA player ever, who would have thought that when he got drafted into the league that he would have signed the highest contract in league history?
Yeah, that is amazing, and good for him. Two-time MVP. He's going to have his work cut out for him, because that team is gradually starting to disintegrate in front of him also. But, yeah, you know, you're going to see some guys get paid. And when this NBA TV deal is up, I spoke with someone who was involved in the first deal. They seem to think – and now think about this, Joe. They got $24 billion over 9 years. They seem to think that they can get at least $50 billion for their next TV deal.
There's some sixth grader out there who's about to be the highest paid player in NBA history.
I mean, the money just keeps rolling in. And, you know, they are truly the global sport. You know, they penetrated multiple parts of the world. They're getting a lot of players out of Africa, and there are a lot of markets there that are starting to really grow, and technology is catching up. I mean, you have some of the richest people in the world that live in Africa. So it's going to be something that we'll need to pay closer attention to.
Yeah, the speaking of that, by the way, the crazy stat from all the moves as the NBA offseason just started, the one that that really was, I mean, you know, 9 years, so maybe it's not all of that crazy, but with Rudy Gobert being traded to the Minnesota Timberwolves, that made Giannis the only player from the 2013 draft that's still with his original team.
Well, you know, 9 years is a long time.
Yeah.
If you don't have anything going for you by then, I think that you probably do need to move. Gobert has a special skill set with regard to being able to be a rim protector. So those guys are always going to be popular. I think they gave up a lot for him, but I think it just goes to show you how little teams think of draft picks anymore, because a lot of these guys just aren't ready to play. So you just say, look, we'll give you a draft pick. If there's a guy out there we want, we'll either trade for him or we'll sign him as a free agent.
Yeah. And last week we were talking about after the draft, how Kofi Coburn of Illinois didn't get drafted, ended up just going and signing with the Utah Jazz. Does that kind of show, okay, the Jazz said, you know what, all we need is a 7-footer in the middle. That's what we need so we can get rid of Gobert. We're going to get this guy. We're just going to let him be that guy now.
Well, I'm sure they'll bring in somebody else, but they're going to give him a long look. I think it's hard to overlook 7 feet, okay? I don't care how good you are. It's hard to overlook 7 feet. And so he'll get a legitimate chance.
Yeah. Also, it's the NHL offseason. No real big moves have been made so far.
No, there was a big move today.
I was going to say, I'm talking about on the ice, but behind the bench, Claves, history was made earlier today.
Yeah, Mike Greer, former St. Louis Blue draft choice, by the way. His dad, I've known forever, Bobby Greer, who's been in the NFL forever. Bobby Greer was one of the guys who first started to put together that New England Patriot dynasty. Bobby Greer was involved in a lot of those early guys that were getting drafted in New England and was part of a lot of those early successful teams. And Mike Greer was in the Blues organization, and he was traded to Edmonton. So he never really played a lot here. Mike Keenan moved him, but he was really smart. He went to Boston University and got his education there, played in the league, had a good career in the National Hockey League. But always wanted to learn the behind-the-scenes elements, and obviously because of his dad being that in the NFL, he gets his shot with the San Jose Sharks. And he's got some interesting pieces out there. I'll be anxious to see what the first move will be, because the Sharks have gone in a completely different direction. He had a brother that played in the NHL. Anyway, he had some health issues, so he had to step down. And then they brought in Bob Murray. Bob Murray wasn't the answer. So they just decided, hey, you know, let's just blow this whole thing up and start over again. So we'll see how that unfolds. But they've got some interesting players that can make them more competitive than you think. But I'm anxious to see what he's able to do, and couldn't be happier for him. And he won't be the only person of color that'll end up with a job in this league. I'll tell you, you know, because another guy whose name was mentioned in that job was Kevin Weeks. Mm-hmm. Kevin Weeks' name has been mentioned for a couple of jobs. But as he was saying, there were a couple of those jobs that were just his name was thrown out there. He hadn't had any formal contact with. And Kevin's smart enough not to get caught up in that whole thing of saying, you know, being part of a token situation. But there are some other guys. Manny Malhotra is a guy that's starting to get a little buzz as well. The guy who's coaching in Cincinnati is starting to get a little buzz. So people of color start to have a real move with regard to the National Hockey League. And, you know, and it's to become a global sport. So we'll see where it goes. And I think even more importantly, global, being a sport that's now transcending within communities around this country. And they're going into the inner city. They're going into the suburbs. They're going out and finding that people of color to be able to contribute. You know, Quentin Byfield was a first round pick, second pick in the draft 2 years ago by the Kings. And he checks a lot of boxes, and he's, I believe, now 20 years old. So you're going to start to see a little bit more of an impact on that front. But again, congratulations to Mike Greer. I've known him since he was a pup, and just to see where he's at now, I'm anxious to see how things develop.
I want to ask you about you mentioned the token situation, and too often in sports,
you mean like the NFL coaching search?
Just going to bring up, I mean, we see a lack of black head coaches in the NFL in a sport where what percentage of the players?
74%.
And then the NBA, how many black coaches are there right now in the NBA?
Well, we have more. Let's see. You got Doc. You've got Tyronn Lue. You've got the Indiana Pacers head coach. You've got the Atlanta Hawks head coach.
Based on percentage of players, too. I mean, that's, you know.
Yeah, it's much higher than what you see in the NFL.
Exactly. So when you get that situation in the NHL or even in the NFL, you have these coaches that are, okay, you know what? Hey, we're going to be bad for the few years. Let's at least make the NFL happy and we'll hire a black coach. Like, how do you as a coach, when you see that opportunity and you take that knowing, you know what, we might not be good, but it's a chance.
I think we're better than that. because those guys, you know, you look at those teams, they want to do that. They weren't very good before you got hired. They're not going to be very good after you get fired. I mean, it's more organizational leadership at the top and why teams continue to be bad. Cleveland's a good example. You know, you look around some other teams that just can't get out of their own way, and it doesn't make a difference who you are. I mean, you just can't go in and turn it around like that. You got to have some sort of team with tradition. You know, Arizona Cardinals are kind of like that. I mean, they had that one little run. They've been a lot more competitive, but they still don't know how to win. San Diego's in that position. They don't know how to win. They've got good talent. You know, the Raiders, they don't know how to win anymore. So you have teams, and it's really more ownership and philosophy than it is the technical element of being able to find good players and good coaches to coach them.
This is Lunch with Claves and Joe. Final few minutes here before we get going. Claves, I know another thing that you're passionate about is the Formula One.
And oh, man, what a race this weekend.
This past weekend. I can't remember. I figured you were on the air doing something when I saw everything was going on. But George Russell and what he did in the Formula One race garnered a lot of attention.
Well, there's a lot of things that went on in this past Formula One race. Lewis Hamilton reaches a podium for the 13th time in his career, the most of anyone to ever be in a Formula One car. There was a lot of things. You know, this tour has a lot of off-track issues, man. Whether it's Nelson Piquet using a racial slur toward Lewis Hamilton, where he was banned from the pit area for life for the British Grand Prix. You had some other racers that were chirping about some other things that were going on. There's a lot of drama, man. And I think the European media builds this up, especially the British media. But there were so many other things that were going on. People really didn't even care who won the race. And Sykes won the race. It was his first race in 150 starts. Think about that. 150 starts, and he gets his first flag.
Jeez. And then the George Russell, what he did in that race. Have you seen anything like that before?
No, I haven't.
For those that don't know, how do you say the guy's name? The one that wrecked.
Oh gosh, I can't think of it off the top.
It was a Chinese racer that wrecked and was pretty much sliding on top of the car.
If it wasn't for the halo, saved his life.
George Russell, another Formula One driver, jumped out of his car, sprinted into the crash area to go check on his friend out there, and knowing full well that once you leave your car, anybody that's seen Talladega Nights knows that once you leave your car, you're done for the race. So he gave up any type of money that he would have got finishing, anything like that, to go make sure on the well-being of a friend of his.
Yeah, it was quite a spectacle. Like I said, I've never seen that before. But I think it just shows you the close-knitness of these racers. They're the best in the world, and they know each other on and off the tracks. They don't all get along. There's no doubt about that. But I don't think anyone wants to see another guy severely injured. You get bumped and bruised for sure. But, you know, when you have the risk of losing your life, and as you mentioned, the way that accident unfolded, that was something, man.
And then on top of that, too, you talk about the engineering that goes into these cars to keep those guys safe with the build of the cars, the halo, everything else, the structure of the racetrack that they're on. I don't know if you saw the camera angle where the car goes goes over the tires and crashes into the fence, and the fence just bounces it right off.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, you know, 10 feet away from fans, and at no point did it look like the fans were at any risk of getting hit.
Well, you know, they've taken so many steps over the last few years to create more safety for the fans. You know, it's a more safe event than what it used to be because, you know, car debris, tires, you name it, would bounce into the stands and you get some people that would get hurt. That's why the smart people who go to races never sit in the front row. You always want to sit up top and watch the whole race.
Yeah.
You know, there's no reason to get close to the action because, A, the action's too fast for you to really keep track of. And B, you can really get seriously hurt.
And then finally, Claves, before we go, Joey Chestnut wins the hot dog eating contest yet again. Did you get to meet him a few years ago when
I met him a few times. I don't know how he does it, you know. But here's the key for him, and the other eaters do it now. He doesn't eat the bun. He just mashes a hot dog down his throat. And because the bun would absorb too much stomach space and the water and everything else, there is an art to it. He told me it is really an art. And you basically have to condition yourself, you know, to be able to absorb that and stretch your stomach. And, you know, he's not a big man. I mean, he's not this hulking guy, but, you know, he's got a unique skill that I'm glad I don't have.
15-time Nathan's hot dog eating contest champion, and did so yesterday, had a ruptured Achilles and did so on crutches. A hockey player could never win the Stanley Cup with a ruptured Achilles, but Joey Chestnut was able to win the Nathan's hot dog eating contest with on crutches yesterday. That's, yeah, no idea how you decide, how you realize that's something you're talented at, but he and the rest of the people up there did, and they're all playing for second. When
can you imagine what that restroom had to smell like after they got finished, where they heaved all that stuff back up?
God. All right, you are in Atlanta for the next 3 day claims. I know there's a lot of people hanging out around there, you know, broadcaster wise and everything else. Who do you talk to pregame when you're down in Atlanta? Who do you look forward to meeting up with?
Yesterday I talked to Brian Jordan. He's doing some games now for the Braves. I'm not sure who it'll be today. Maybe Chip Carey. I love talking to Chip. I'll tell you another guy I love talking to is Ron Washington. Third base coach, former Texas Ranger manager, old school, man, he is old school. I can tell you who I'm not talking to.
That's how baseball goes sometimes.
I'm not talking to their left fielder designated hitter.
Who's that? Oh, Ozuna?
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
We'll find somebody. You know, there's a good chance we'll talk to Derek or Katie or John Denton just to kind of get their thoughts on the first half and where do we go from here. So there's plenty of candidates down here in the ATL, one of my favorite cities. By the way, the worst food in all of baseball, not just in the media lounge, concessions is just as worse, just as bad. The worst.
The only time I've been down there was for that game five. And I, for the life of me, I can't remember what I ate.
It was awful. It's awful. It's awful.
Who has the best?
You know what? Philadelphia does a nice job. Philadelphia, Dodgers are okay.
Are you talking concessions? Or are you talking about what they feed you in the?
Yes.
Okay.
But their concessions are terrible too. In Atlanta, they just got the whole thing messed up.
I'll tell you this: last year at Dodger Stadium, I was very, very happy with the way the concessions worked, with how easy it was to just go get something, you pay for it, you keep going, everything mm-hmm. already set up, whether
a lot of places are like that now.
Yeah, it was like that. It was extremely convenient to do that out there at Dodger Stadium last year. So that's I didn't expect that. I didn't know what to expect going into it, but I wasn't expecting it to be that convenient as it was. Claves, enjoy the rest of your trip down right there in Atlanta. Hopefully it's not too hot. I know it's a scorcher up here. Right. Yeah. So it's brutal up here in St. Louis.
What do you expect? I mean, no need to wear a sweater around here.
No, you'll sweat that right off. But you'll be back in town this weekend for Cardinals and Phillies here. And we got plenty of stuff coming your way too here on Claves Online. So for Mike Claiborne, I'm Joe Roderick. We have been driven by Munganass St. Louis Acura, powered by Ameren, Illinois, and sponsored by the Gillespies at thehomeloanexpert.com. We will talk to you soon.
On Sunday, July 10th, Cardinals can cheer on Yachty in style.
And Molina hits it down the left field line. It's hooking in. It is gone. How about Yachty? What a start. Keep on doing it, Yachty.
That day, 10,000 kids ages 15 and younger entering with a ticket will go home with a Yachty Cardinals tank top. Start your summer off right and stay cool with this one-of-a-kind stadium giveaway presented by Mercy. For tickets and more information, go to cardinals.com/promotions.